All across America and around the world, this is Veterans Radio. This is Veterans Radio. And now, your host for today's program, Dale Thronberry.
And good afternoon and welcome to Veterans Radio. My name is Dale Thronberry, and this is our year-end program. Holy mackerel, 2020 is finally over. Thank goodness. I can't wait to see what happens next week or next year. It should be rather interesting. Anyway, I wanted to welcome you to this program. We're going to be talking about a couple of things. We have an interview with Brian Hayes from the Ann Arbor VA. He's going to be talking about the availability of the COVID-19 vaccine at your local VA hospital. We've got that. And we've also got a local program that we're going to be talking about. It's called AMMO. Not that kind of ammo. It's the Association of Michigan Military Organizations. It's a group of museums and other organizations in the state of Michigan that honor veterans and the military and so forth. And we're going to highlight a couple of those particular museums here later on during the program. But first, I want to make sure that we thank all of our sponsors and supporters. We couldn't do it without them. And that's going to be Legal Help for Veterans, the National Veterans Business Development Council, better known as NVBDC, the Eisenhower Center here in Ann Arbor, Michigan, VetBiz Central in out of Flint, and VVA Post 310, Charles S. Kettle's Vietnam Veterans of America Post here in Ann Arbor, the American Legion Post 46, and the VFW Post 423, all of Ann Arbor. Learn more about these organizations and the services that they provide on our website. That's veteransradio.net/our sponsors. All right, so we're going to get right into our first interview, and this is with, as I mentioned, this is Brian Hayes with the Ann Arbor VA. He's in charge of public relations out there. So here we go. Here's Brian right now. Well, we're back here on Veterans Radio, and this isn't normally going to be our benefits program at the end of the month, but we're going to give most of the crew off. But I did want to ask Brian Hayes from the Ann Arbor Veterans Affairs Office Hospital System. He's a public affairs officer up there. What exactly is going on with the vaccine situation with the Ann Arbor VA? Brian, welcome back.
Well, thanks, Dale. It's really exciting right now. I mean, history making. We received our first shipment of vaccines last week on the 15th, and we began vaccinating on the 16th. And vaccinations continue now. We're working our way through that first group of people that need to be vaccinated. And fairly soon we should start opening up, and start getting our veterans vaccinated as those new vaccines start coming in. So it's really exciting, what's going on here, and very, very, very busy.
Well, I can certainly understand that. Is there any sort of protocol or order that the veterans will be afforded, I guess you could say, the vaccine?
Yeah, it is stratified by a few criteria. So, you know, like age is a factor. So we want to make sure we get some of our older veterans vaccinated right away, because that is, you know, that is a high risk for severe illness or death from COVID. It increases with age. Race and ethnicity are also factors that are used. So, because data shows that, people of color are disproportionately affected by COVID-19, Black, Hispanic, Native American communities especially. It's also stratified by existing health problems. So people with certain health conditions like cancer, diabetes, or heart disease, they have a higher risk of having a negative outcome from COVID-19. So they're part of the equation. And then other factors, if you're living in a nursing home or other group living facility. So that's kind of how it's been stratified out. And they have a very detailed priority list of who will receive the vaccine and in which order.
Okay. So will the VA contact the veteran, or does a veteran need to instigate the call?
That's a great question. No, the veteran does not have to instigate the call. We have all the data we need of all the veterans that we have in our healthcare system. So our healthcare professionals here will be reaching out individually to each veteran as their vaccine availability comes up, and they will be called and scheduled and have them in for their vaccine. We're very excited. This is really big news.
Yes, it certainly is. You know, it's sort of that proverbial light at the end of the tunnel, I hope.
That really is. Yeah, and it's not a train this time, right?
So. Right, absolutely. So that is great news about the vaccine being available through the through the VA. I did get a notification that they're not going to be deferring billing any longer. Is that what you understand?
Yeah, that's how I understand it. I'm not a billing expert, but as a veteran myself, I have copays here. So, and I just recently got a bill for, you know, for my copays for this year to start in, I think, January or February. But I think that they're reconsidering that again and maybe extending that. But I'm not an expert on the benefit side of things like that.
Okay. I was just curious about that because I got a little letter that said I owed them a little money, and I go, what? I don't even remember this.
Yeah, well, that's from the deferment of copays, which started, I believe, in April. Right. But then VA hasn't been granted by Congress the ability to, you know, forgive all those copays. So we have to send out bills. We had to send out a bill for all the copays from this year, which I believe come due in January.
Okay. Well, I know there's a lot of exciting things going on at the VA. What else would you like our audience to know about?
Well, the construction continues. That front entrance construction is going to be gorgeous once that's done, and I just can't wait until everybody can see that. But right now, we're really single-mindedly focused on getting all the veterans in our catchment area vaccinated against this disease. That's where we're focusing. That's where we're putting all of our effort. But you know, like you said, we're still providing healthcare. You know, we're still doing the daily business of being a hospital that specializes in veteran health care. So on top of all the other stuff that's going on, we continue our day-to-day operations.
Mm-hmm. Have you heard anything about the official name-changing date for the Ann Arbor VA?
Well, I heard a little bit this week. We got the bill back, and it was passed actually last week. It was passed in the Senate. It had already been passed in the House, and now it's on the president's desk to be signed. Once it's signed, that gives us the authorization to go ahead with the name change, and we'll begin that process. And then we're also in planning for some sort of ceremony. It could come after the name actually officially gets changed, only because of the pandemic, and don't want to get a lot of people together in the same space. But also weather too. You know, we might be able to do something a little more substantial if we can all at least gather outside. So maybe we'll wait until the weather breaks a little bit in the spring, early summer, before we do something really nice to do the official renaming ceremony. But yeah, it's gone through Congress. It was a bicameral bill, House and Senate, and now we're just waiting for the president's signature.
Okay, and that's just to remind our audience, we're going to be renaming the Ann Arbor VA Hospital for Charles S. Kettles Medal of Honor recipient.
That's right. We will be, once it's passed and signed into law, we will be forever known as the Lieutenant General Charles S. Kettles VA Medical Center.
He was only a colonel. He tried it. So he's going to be Lieutenant Colonel Charles S. Kettles. I'm sure he would like that promotion. he was a really, really
yeah.
good guy. Well, Brian, I want to thank you very much for taking time out of your extremely busy day. I know that. And I want to wish you and yours and the whole VA system over there a very Merry Christmas and a happy, happy New Year.
Thanks, Dale. Right back at you, and I appreciate you having me on today.
Okay, we'll talk to you again next month. All right. Thank you very much, Brian. It was great to talking with Brian again. Remember to follow us here on Veterans Radio. Starting back in January, we'll be having our benefits program. That will be the last Sunday of every month is when we do our benefits program. And Brian is normally with us to talk about what's going on at the local VA and at the VA system across the country. All right, we're going to start into our program here about AMMO. Again, AMMO is the Association of Michigan Military Organizations, and my partner Jim Falsone did an interview with one of the founders of AMMO, and so we're going to go right to that right now.
We want to welcome to Veterans Radio and a spotlight on the Association of Michigan Military Organization, or AMMO. We've entered Veterans Radio America, has entered a partnership with AMMO to bring you a quick look at a Michigan military organization that supports the history of military service here in the state of Michigan. And we encourage you to visit these members of AMMO and AMMO itself on Facebook. Dennis Skopinski is going to talk to us about AMMO today. Dennis, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Hi, welcome, Jim. I'm glad to be here.
We see this as a great opportunity to highlight some of the wonderful military organizations here in the state of Michigan, but why don't you tell us what the mission and the motivation was for setting up AMMO?
Okay, well, AMMO was, we started about a year and a half ago. John Ryder from Michigan Military Heroes Museum was sort of the spearhead. And he knew that people that were interested in one military museum would be interested in other military museums. And we thought we could form a confederacy of marketing, you know, a marketing organization, basically, of these different museums so that people in Michigan would know, you know, like where they could go one summer. There's like 15 organizations right now that are part of AMMO. And so this way you'd have, you know, if you wanted to go somewhere, you'd go to see where I'm at in Grass Lake. You go see Yankee Air Museum in Belleville. If you're on the other side of the state, you got Muskegon, you got, you know, the LST, and you got the submarine, and, you know, all sorts of stuff all around the state. And so we wanted to form something where people could go to one site and get all this information. And so, so far we don't have a website, but we do have a Facebook page under Association of Michigan Military Organizations.
And I wanted, I wanted to talk about the 15 current members of AMMO, because they really are a diverse collection. It's Army, Navy, Air Force. I don't know if the Marines are in there. We got to get the Marines in there. But it seems like it's a pretty diverse group, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And I'll just read off the 15 so people can see about it or hear about it. First of all, there's Michigan Heroes Museum in Frankenmuth. Then we've got the other spectrum, Holocaust Memorial Center in Farmington Hills, LST 393 in Muskegon, USS Silversides in Muskegon, the Yankee Air Museum in Belleville, Michigan Military Technical and Historic Society in East Point, the Polar Bear Memorial Association in Frankenmuth, the Air Zoo in Kalamazoo, Michigan Military Heritage Museum in Grass Lake, the Michigan World War II Legacy Memorial in Royal Oak, USS Edson, the Saginaw Valley Naval Ship Museum in Bangor Township, that's Bay City, Michigan Military and Veterans Hall of Fame, which doesn't really have a location, Grand Army of the Republic Museum in Leslie, Tuskegee Air Museum in Detroit, and Fort Wayne in Detroit.
And there's really all over the state there are different displays and museums. Some of them are just with organizations. Some of them are more protected, like out at Selfridge Air Base, there's a great static museum of all kinds of airframes. And is your idea to grow AMMO over time and add more of these locations into the joint marketing and joint promotion that AMMO has in mind?
Yes, it is. And the problem with, like, Selfridge and Camp Custer is that they're active military bases. In order to get in to see the museum, you generally have to, I mean, it's, you have to send them your driver's license 24, 48 hours in advance. And it isn't something you can just go to. You really have to plan your visit. And so we didn't include them because right now it's really not something that the general public can go and see.
The other thing that I've noticed in traveling around, Dennis, is that many municipalities, cities, counties, townships have pretty striking war memorials that honor our military history. Have you spoken with any of those kind of organizations to see if they have an interest?
Well, that's the reason why we call it Association of Michigan Military Organizations, because we just didn't want to limit it to museums. And so right now we're trying to form the core group. In fact, they're doing some Chris Causey from East Point Museum and John Ryder from Frankenmuth are together getting all the bylaws and our nonprofit status and all the legal stuff, all the admin stuff needs to be done so that we can go out and recruit other people, other organizations to be part of it. Because we found that some of the, like, local city and county museums, even though they're not doing military 100% of the time, every once in a while they'll come up with something, like in Dearborn, Michigan, which we've worked with them, in the basement of their one museum, which is devoted to the commandant's quarters of the Dearborn Arsenal back in 1830s, is they've got a display for a World War I Eagle boat, and it's all about, you know, the production of the Eagle boat during World War I. So they're not really a military museum, but they do have some military aspects to their museum. and we want to be able to accept them, or like veterans groups, or like the Michigan Military Hall of Fame. They're not a museum, but they're an organization. So we want to be able to, you know, have it opened up so we can include just about any groups, you know, into our group in the future. And hopefully they'll have something, you know, either a physical location to display, or they'll be at another location where they can display their items.
Yeah, as I say, these are really scattered all over the state of Michigan. This is a great idea, so that I guess the word I'd use is it's a clearinghouse. The Association of Michigan Military Organizations, or AMMO, is going to sort of be a clearinghouse where I can go to AMMO and find what might be in my locale, or I might be driving somewhere and part of my family road trip, I want to stop along the way. Is that kind of what you envision?
That's exactly what we envision. One of the things I do the Facebook page for AMMO. And so anytime there's a new post for the Michigan Heroes Museum, the USS Silver Sides, or the LST, or any one of our organizations, I post that to the AMMO site. So if you want a current events or what's going on, there's going to be the events there. There's going to be any new postings. So instead of belonging to like 15 or 20 different organizations, you can go to the AMMO page, and there's, you know, everything there regarding museums and things to do as far as, you know, Michigan military organizations are. They're all going to be on that web or the Facebook page.
Yeah, I think that in the library world, they call that curating the information, gathering it from all sorts of sources, and you're putting it up on AMMO, so I only have to check the AMMO Facebook page to find out what might be going on that's interesting to me, whether it's and I see there's some virtual stuff that you've been posting, or if I'm driving there to do something live.
Right. And so that's one of the things we try to do is sometimes places have events going on. Other times they have online events, or perhaps they're associated with an online event. Like during the World War I centennial, they had a number, and they still do have a number of online seminars. After something that's, you know, pertinent to Michigan or something interesting or like that, we post that to the AMMO site. So even if you're not a member of the World War I, you know, centennial thing, you can still look at it. And if you're interested or know somebody that's interested, they can go online and sign up for the seminar.
Well, I think it's a great way to bring this information and these opportunities, which are spread out all over the state, into one spot. So somebody might find something that says, boy, that really piques my interest and the time fits because of what I've got going on, and I know I can look there, but I'd never look at all 15 places in a given day to try to find out what my opportunities were. So I think being this clearinghouse is a great idea for AMMO. And if folks want to continue to learn more information or keep up to date with what you're doing, what's the best way to stay in contact?
It would be to go to the AMMO Face page, and you have, and once again, if you go to Facebook, you're going to have to look up Association of Michigan Military Organizations. If you search AMMO, it won't show up because, you know, that's part of their algorithm.
Yeah, you'd probably get blocked for using the acronym. So I want to recommend to all of our veteran radio listeners as part of our spotlight here to go to Facebook and search for the Association of Michigan Military Organizations. Like it, follow them, and I think you'll find that really interesting. Dennis Skupinski, we want to thank you for coming on Veterans Radio today.
Okay, thank you, Jim.
We're going to take a real quick break right now, and then we will be back, and we'll be highlighting some of these various organizations and museums around the state of Michigan. So stay tuned. You're listening to Veterans Radio.
A VA claim denied by the Board of Veterans Appeals, contact Legal Help for Veterans at 1-800-693-4800. They're experts in handling cases before the U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims. Their number again, 1-800-693-4800.
We are back here on Veterans Radio, and we're going to go to our first organization here, and this is a local Kind of a continuation of our program last week where we were talking about Army Air Corps and so forth. And we're going to take a visit right now to the Yankee Air Museum, which happens to be in Belleville, Michigan here, just east of Ann Arbor. And Jim Falcione is going to, again, be conducting this interview. And he's conducting the interview this time with Kevin Walsh, who's the president and CEO of the Yankee Air Museum. So take it away, Jim.
We want to welcome to the spotlight on the Association of Michigan Military Organizations, or AMMO, today. As you know, Veterans Radio America has a partnership with AMMO to bring you a quick look at a Michigan military organization that supports the history of military service in the state of Michigan. And we encourage you to go visit AMMO on Facebook and this particular organization by visiting it. But we want to welcome Kevin Walsh, the president and CEO of the Yankee Air Museum. Kevin, welcome to Veterans Radio again.
Thank you, Jim. It's a pleasure to be here, as always.
Well, we're really happy to have the opportunity to talk and talk a little bit about what's going on in this weird year at the Yankee Air Museum. Tell our listeners what they ought to be looking for.
Yeah, absolutely. It wasn't the year we expected or deserved. You know, it goes across the board for everybody. But as being a nimble and adaptive organization, we were able to, follow, orders from our governor and our health department and figure out a way to re-engage folks. Obviously, we were closed, from our mid-March point. It actually closed a little bit early before even the shutdown. And then we stayed closed a couple weeks after just to make sure that we had everything right. Because what we didn't want to do is we didn't want to create an environment that would be at all questionable or dangerous for the spread of the virus, for our team members first and foremost, but also for our guests. And we've been able to re-engage at quite a significant level. Which has been very exciting, to get back and show people, the great things that we do. But in a different format. So it's taken on a whole new look of operation, and couldn't be more proud of our volunteers and team members, to how we've adapted.
Well, the word museum puts a few people off, and I really want to get across to folks that this, the Yankee Air Museum, which everybody in the state of Michigan should know about, maybe because of the aircraft it has or the Thunder over Michigan it runs, but give folks some sense of the size and uniqueness of what we call the Yankee Air Museum.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. We certainly have that traditional museum aspect about us, but certainly dynamically the way we run the organization is very different than a lot of traditional museums. And as you mentioned, the Thunder over Michigan Air Show, not just the marquee event for Yankee Air Museum, but it's a marquee event in Southeast Michigan. It embodies that the spirit of celebrating our military past and present, and obviously bringing American aeronautics to the forefront in what we think is one of the most dynamic ways that you can celebrate the aviation industry and those that have worked and served in that industry. Thunder is just one example. The other piece to us that is so different than most traditional static museums is the aircraft that we fly, but also that we give rides on. So right now we've transformed our flyable fleet, the aircraft that actually fly in the collection, to make sure that people are able to ride on these. So there's five different airplanes that we now have in the historic flying aircraft collection that people can pay and get up in the air and actually go for a ride in them. And there's so few museums that you can get into an artifact and experience the artifact live. And that's one of the things that makes us, again, very, very different in the fact that you can fly on a World War II bomber. You can fly on a 1928 tri-motor. You can fly in a Vietnam-era Huey helicopter. All these different experiences and what we call air adventures, because they are. It's an adventure, which, again, just breaks that mold of museum as you think of placards and artifacts and dim lights.
Right.
And there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with it at all, because we have that static aspect of it, but we want to be more dynamic than just a static museum.
Well, I can tell folks, because I know folks who've done it, I've done this, if you need a gift for that guy, maybe it's dad, granddad, uncle, who's hard to find a gift for, get them a gift certificate to fly in one of these Yankee Air Museum aircraft. They will smile for a year. It's an incredible opportunity. As you said, I've never heard it called an air adventure, which I think it absolutely is, and is a great idea. And it's got to set you apart, really, from all of the other similar military museums in the state of Michigan, I would think.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's something that crosses all genders, all cultures. It's a visceral experience. When you're sitting in a Huey helicopter, it doesn't matter who you are, and the doors are open and you're strapped into the helicopter and you go for a flight, for as cheap as $99 a seat, It is just something that you just can't get anywhere else, and riding in something that, served our nation, but also it's just this visceral experience of flight, unlike anything else. We go to Detroit Metro Airport, we get on a commercial airliner, it's climate controlled, it's insulated, it's quiet, it's smooth riding, and that's flying today, but we take you back in time, and the flying back in time is so much more. I just keep coming back to the word visceral, where the skin of the bombers is only the thickness of a quarter. So you smell the aviation fuel burning and the roar of the engine. There's no insulation. You're wearing ear protection. And it puts you in a period of history, a moment of history is captured by that ride. And like I said, it doesn't matter who you are or what your background is. When you get to go for something that's that exhilarating, it stays with you, but it also gives you that appreciation to say, wow, I didn't know it used to be like that. But what is really neat is that point in time was a very, very exciting time in American aeronautics as we were learning and developing aircraft.
Well, as we come to the end of the spotlight period here on the spotlight on an ammo organization, and we're talking to Kevin Walsh, the president and CEO of Yankee Air Museum. Kevin, tell our listeners a little bit about your website present and how they might learn more about what's out there. And if they're going to take my advice, they're going to go get that gift card and make somebody's day this holiday season.
Hey, absolutely. Well, if you don't have a good web presence now, you're so far behind the eight ball. And that was one of the things that we really took a great product and made even better during the pandemic. You're able to do all the things that you would normally do, buy tickets to come to the museum, buy the air adventure rides, buy tickets to the air show. But for those that don't yet want to engage physically at the site, there is something called Creativity Hangar that was born out of the pandemic. It was always a kind of a small section on our website, but became incredibly robust as we have all sorts of activities for all different age groups on the actual website under the Creativity Hangar tab, and kids can engage. Like just for an example, just past Halloween here, a few days ago, there was stencils and things that you could download, cut out, and do your pumpkin carving if you wanted a Huey helicopter or a Cobra helicopter on your pumpkin. Some of them are crafts and some of them are learning tools. There's a lot of things that you can do to join in the Yankee Air Museum's activities. It doesn't involve coming physically to our location. We welcome people to come and engage in those activities online and check it out at yankeeairmuseum.org.
There we go. I was waiting for him to give you the .org because you really got to pay attention, listeners, on what the right website is. So it's yankeeairmuseum.org. Kevin, we appreciate you spending a little time with us in the spotlight here.
Moving right along, our next interview is going to be with the Air Zoo Aerospace and Science Museum in Kalamazoo, Michigan. Again, we're looking at more airplanes. This is really cool for me. I love this stuff. So make sure you check out the AMMO Facebook page. That's the Association of Michigan Military Organizations. And right now, we're going to Kazoo. Here you go. Here's Jim Falsone again.
And today's spotlight is on the Air Zoo in Kalamazoo, and we're thrilled to have Troy Thrash, who is the president and chief executive officer of the Air Zoo, on. Troy, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It is my pleasure to be able to speak with you today.
Well, I think many people maybe have driven by the signage or the Air Zoo itself and never pulled in and stopped and spent enough time to find out what a jewel it is. Why don't you start with giving us a little history of the Air Zoo, and then you can lead us into what you've got going on today.
Sure. Well, thank you. In 2019, the Air Zoo celebrated its 40th anniversary. So the Air Zoo first opened in 1979, but it started really even before that. Susie Parrish and her husband, Pete Parrish, who are our two founders, and some friends used to fly old warbirds around the Kalamazoo area, up and down from the Kalamazoo Airport. And soon they noticed that people were coming out to see them each day that they were flying, and they began to ask a lot of questions about what kind of airplane is that, how fast, how high, how far, what was it used for? And so the Parrishes and their friends ultimately said, you know what, when we think it's time to maybe build a hangar here and start doing this more. And the more they did that, the more interest came in, and they certainly then decided it's time to create a museum to really help people learn about World War II aircraft. And so the first five aircraft that came into the museum were all named after animals, like a flying tiger, a Bearcat, a Warhawk. And so even though the Air Zoo's real name is the Kalamazoo Aviation History Museum, the term Air Zoo really came out of that and is, of course, a play on Kalamazoo. So over the last 40 years, we have grown from about 30,000 square feet to over 200,000 square feet, from five airplanes to over 100 aircraft and spacecraft, amusement park rides, flight simulators, hands-on exhibits, just a real aerospace and science interactive experience.
And that acquisition of new things to see and learn about continues to this day, because Troy and I had a little trouble getting hooked up for this final interview of the year, in part because you're running around all the country collecting one more plane. Tell us about it.
That's right. Yeah. So 2.5 years ago now, we found out that the Air Force was going to be releasing four F-117 stealth fighters to museums each year over the next few years. And so I flew out to Tonopah Test Range in Nevada, and I had the opportunity to see one and see what it was going to look like, the restoration that it would need if we were lucky enough to get one here in Kalamazoo. And a couple of years later, we found out that we were one of the first in line, and in fact, we are the first non-government museum to display an F-117. So it was just a couple of weeks ago, I flew out to Nevada, drove up to Tonopah Test Range, loaded our F-117, which is tail number 817, called Shaba, loaded it onto two trucks, and I spent over a week driving home following Shaba's fuselage all the way home. It was quite an amazing experience. We did all sorts of Facebook videos and YouTube videos and Facebook Lives and things just to really garner some excitement, which wasn't too hard to do for our community to welcome Shaba home. So we're so excited. Shaba has some incredible combat history in Desert Storm and Just Cause and Allied Force. And so to be able to bring that history, bring those stories home here to Kalamazoo, it's just such a pleasure for us.
Well, and this is the sort of thing that one gets to experience when going to the Air Zoo. As you mentioned, you have over 100 rare craft of different types. Tell us some of the other sort of exhibits that one might see if they visit the Air Zoo in Kalamazoo.
Well, certainly starting with what we think is one of our crown jewel exhibits is our restoration center, which is part of our entire exhibit experience. So the F-117 has now moved into our restoration center since it arrived in early December. At the moment, we are restoring two World War II aircraft that have been on the bottom of Lake Michigan for at least 65 years each, an FM-2 Wildcat and an SBV-2P Douglas Dauntless dive bomber. So you can imagine being down on the bottom of Lake Michigan for 6 to 7 decades. There's quite a lot of damage done, but our team of 75 restoration volunteers come in every day to restore these aircraft to their former glory right on our exhibit floor, and at times work with public visitors, community organizations, school groups who get to work directly on these historic aircraft. And that's where the F-117 is now, just waiting to be taken apart and restored. So that's a huge, huge part of our exhibit experience. But we also have amusement park rides inside for young people to come and enjoy the feeling of flight on our balloon ride or our Ferris wheel or biplane rides. We have state-of-the-art flight simulators, which is always a draw for people who want to feel like what it might be to be a real pilot, and in some cases flying a nice steady route. And then, of course, if you happen to go on with a fourth grader, you're going to be doing barrel rolls and dives into the water at a moment's notice. We have a theater, a 65-seat theater, where we show all sorts of aviation, space, and military-related movies, generally short films. We have hands-on exhibits of all types. We really want to focus on not just bringing the history of these aircraft and spacecraft to life, but for young people, we want to help them understand the science, the technology, the innovation, the creativity that has led to these incredible machines, starting with World War I aircraft all the way up to an SR-71 Blackbird that we have in our collection. So those hands-on exhibits focus on things like Bernoulli's principle and other physics principles, the chemistry behind jet fuel and rocket fuel, and really run the gamut of science, because we want to make sure that we have kids start to ask more questions and wonder how and why these things came to be. And in fact, how a large metal tube can possibly get up into and stay in the air. So really focus as much as we can on those scientific and technological principles right on our exhibit floor.
Well, it's a fascinating, multifaceted, I really should say, museum with all kinds of opportunities for folks to come by and check it out. And I think I saw somewhere in 2019 you had over 200,000 people do just that. In this weird year of 2020 and going into 2021, if people are interested in coming by, what can you tell us about the experience that they might have?
Well, the day we shut down on March 13th of 2020, we got the entire team together and said, what do we need to look like when we reopen that is going to uphold our standard in the community as a safe space? And we built what we called our reentry plan, focusing on safety. Of course, things that everyone hears about with the masks, the social distancing. We invested in thermal infrared scanners to take temperatures at a distance. We have pivoted, because we don't have our rides open right now, all of our ride operators to full-time cleaners who are cleaning the high-touch areas like the hands-on exhibits and even the propellers of some of the aircraft that young people like to touch. And in fact, this reentry plan, our model for safety, has been used by museums all across Michigan, but also all across the country, like the Air Force Museum, the Smithsonian Air and Space Museum, has taken our plan and, in fact, shared it with other Smithsonian museums. So one thing that people can expect is the highest standard of safety in a museum experience right here at the Air Zoo.
And for folks who have maybe some time coming up and they'd like to work this into their schedule, give us a website that they should go to make their plans.
Sure. If you go to the website airzoo.org, AIRZOO.ORG, you can certainly find out all sorts of things about when we're open, which is 9 o'clock to 5 o'clock, Monday through Saturday, and then Sunday is noon to 5 o'clock, but also information on all of our exhibits, of our large-scale artifacts that are on our exhibit floor, plus a handful of aircraft that are outside as well to enjoy. So airzoo.org, and then you can also find us on Facebook as well.
We hope you enjoyed this spotlight on an AMO organization, and in particular the Air Zoo in Kalamazoo. Check it out.
Thanks, Jim. That's a great story as well. We encourage everybody to check out these organizations, these museums around the state of Michigan, and of course your state, wherever you happen to be listening to our program. We're going to take a quick break here, and this week our Medal of Honor is sponsored by the Fretz Family Foundation in honor of Major Kevin Nave, United States Marine Corps. The Medal of Honor this week is kind of interesting, and I wanted to just briefly tell you a little bit about it. It's about a gentleman named Hammerberg, and Hammerberg received the Medal of Honor. His parents accepted it in 1945. But what makes this so interesting is that he's a Michigan man. He was born in the Upper Peninsula, grew up in Flint. He's received his Medal of Honor posthumously. He is buried in Southfield, Michigan. There's a large memorial dedicated to Hammersburg at the VFW Post 5966 up in Menominee, Michigan. And all of his medals and uniforms are on display at another AMMO museum, the Michigan Heroes Museum in Frankenmuth, Michigan. So here's our break, and we will be right back after this.
The Medal of Honor is the highest award for valor in combat given a member of the Armed Forces of the United States. There have been over 3,400 recipients of the nation's highest award. This is one of them. Boatswain's Mate Second Class Owen Hammersburg worked for hours to rescue two fellow divers trapped underwater. Details after this. When two fellow divers were hopelessly trapped in a cave-in of steel wreckage of an LST sunk in 40 feet of water and 20 feet of mud in Pearl Harbor, Hammersburg unhesitatingly went overboard to effect their rescue despite the certain hazard of additional cave-ins and the risk of fouling his lifeline on jagged pieces of steel embedded in the shifting sand. He reached the first of the trapped men, freed him from the wreckage, and working desperately in pitch-black darkness, finally effected his release from fouled lines, enabling him to reach the surface. Wearied, but undaunted after several hours of arduous labor, Hammersburg continued his struggle to save the second diver. Venturing still farther under the buried hulk, he held tenaciously to his purpose, reaching a place immediately above the other man, just as another cave-in occurred. A piece of heavy steel pinned him crosswise over his shipmate in a position that protected the man beneath from further injury, while placing the full brunt of terrific pressure on himself. Although he succumbed in agony 18 hours after he had gone to the aid of his fellow divers, Hammersburg effectively saved the lives of his two comrades.
The Medal of Honor series is a production of Veterans Radio.
Are you a veteran or a military spouse interested in starting or growing an existing business? Then you want to connect with VetBiz Central, Michigan's only veteran business resource center, providing free one-on-one business counseling services, including research plans and preparing veterans to be lender ready. If you're in business, VetBiz Central offers comprehensive strategic marketing strategies to help you connect to corporations. They are one of 20 centers nationwide devoted to veteran business development through the U.S. Small Business Administration Office of Veteran Business Development. Vets helping vets. Visit their website at vetbizcentral.org. Or call 810-767-VETS.
And we're back here on Veterans Radio, and we're coming up on our last segment of the program. And as we know, we've been talking about the Association of Michigan Military Organizations. You can follow them on Facebook. And our last project, or our last museum memorial, is going to be here. Is going to be the Michigan World War II Legacy Memorial. And again, this is Jim Falzone conducting the interview, so we'll be back as soon as this interview is completed.
First, we want to welcome into Veterans Radio John Metin, who's the president of the Michigan World War II Legacy Memorial. John, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Thanks for having me, Jim.
Well, this is a passion project of yours that you've taken on in retirement from General Motors. And it's a little bit of family background. You've got a father who was a Marine during the Korean War. You've traveled to such places as Normandy and Auschwitz. So you're doing your own learning of history here. But why don't you tell us how the World War II Legacy Memorial began?
Sure. So our organization started actually as Honor Flight Michigan. And the purpose of the organization was to take World War II veterans on a day trip to Washington to see the World War II Memorial there, as well as other sites. So there were several trips done that way. And then once those were completed, we looked at, what can we do next? For one, we found that the chaperones that went with the veterans also got a lot out of it because of the time they spent with the veterans, hearing their stories and such. And we looked at it and said, in Michigan, there really isn't a World War II memorial. So the idea was born to have a World War II memorial in Michigan, which would talk about not only the contributions of the veterans on the war front, but also the other contributions of Michigan on the home front. We're all familiar with the Arsenal of Democracy, but there are also so many other stories with Michigan that we can tell about their contribution to the war and really how it shapes the state, moving forward even up till today.
Well, World War II is certainly a defining moment in history. It's the greatest generation who are now passing on. So it's an important slice of history that maybe doesn't get taught enough or reflected on enough by the population. But this is an audacious project to try to build a World War II legacy memorial here in the state of Michigan. Tell us what stage of this audacious project you're involved in.
Yeah, and the purpose of the memorial is actually as an educational tool as well as to honor the veterans. So the memorial will physically be located in Memorial Park in Royal Oak at 13 Mile and Woodward. We've been recognized by the Michigan legislature, both the Senate and the House, as the official World War II memorial for Michigan. So basically we have the design plans are completed for the memorial. We've had it approved by the city. We have an agreement with the city to use the land. It'll be on the northwest corner of the current park area there at 13 and Woodward. And we will build a memorial basically and then give the land back to them, and they will maintain a memorial in perpetuity. We also have several statues as part of the memorial. There's 9 statues in total. We have the scale models of all those that have been completed and 3D scanned. And our first full-size statue has just been completed at Fine Art Sculpture in Clarkston. The sculptor of these was Larry Halbert, and these 9 statues are just a part of our story. One that has been completed so far is what we call Joe, who is a soldier that is sitting in a foxhole reading a letter from home. And then a corresponding statue to that are the parents on the other side of the memorial, reading a letter from the soldier, you know, and then just showing the distance between them. There are two other scenes, the air scene and a sea scene as well. So the air scene has a Tuskegee Airman as well as another pilot, and Rosie the Riveter working on one of the B-24s at Willow Run. The sea scene is a sailor on watch, and then two children picking milk pods, which were or milk seed pods, which were used for the life vest stuffing, because during World War II, the normal stuffing would have been K-Pak, but that came from the Indies, which had been occupied by the Japanese. So Michigan, Petoskey had a large milkweed processing plant that basically did that, processed the milkweed into the stuffing that was used for the vest, and the whole community, and actually state and even outside the state, contributed by sending the milkweed pods there for the processing. So those are just some of the stories that we're trying to tell. So the statues, I mentioned the state of those, the design we had completed. So we're really in the mode now of trying to raise the funds to complete the rest of it. The total memorial is about a $3 million project. Thus far, we've raised about $500,000. Part of that has been in the sale of paver bricks to honor different loved ones. And we have about 1,200 of those paver bricks so far that have been donated. We are now working with some of the larger foundations and larger donors to try to really kickstart this. Of course, this year we had a lot of plans around the 75th anniversary of the end of World War II. But of course, then COVID hit in March, and it's really knocked our efforts back. But we've continued to do what we can virtually. So we hope to be able to raise enough funds so that hopefully sometime next year we could break ground and get started.
Well, it's a fantastic idea, and I want to encourage people to go to the website, click on the memorial, the artistic elements, and you'll see what John's talking about. These statues are really, they really invoke that time and place. So this is a great addition to this memorial, and I'm sure if somebody's out there and they wanted to fund one of these statues, there's probably an opportunity to do that. So, John, tell us what the website is and how people can help out on this project.
Yeah, the website is michiganww2memorial.org. So michiganww2memorial.org. And on the website, there is something that talks about the memorial where you can click on, as you mentioned, a 3D fly-through of the whole video. I talked about the statues, but there are also several other elements to the memorial, a granite wall, pillars representing different things representing the war. There's also a map of Michigan where we're going to show where different things had happened, and a kind of a large amphitheater area. I think what we wanted to really make people understand is that this is not just a very cold memorial that you just go and see and walk away. We want people to interact with it and to be a part of the park, as well as be an educational tool. So on different elements, we also have a education coalition that has written lesson plans corresponding to the different areas of the memorial. So the education coalition, we will have those online so that when people go to the memorial, they'll be able to go to those different pieces and be able to learn about those, as well as further lessons to look at the lessons that we learned from World War II, because that's what we feel is really important to teach to current and future generations. It's not just honor the World War II veterans, but to honor them by carrying on the legacy of all the things that they gave us and the things that they demonstrated during the war. I think if we look at just our current situation with the COVID, one thing that has helped us all get through this is that we looked back at World War II and look what the country did and said, you know what? Because they did that, we know we can beat this virus, because look what they did during World War II. So that gave us the confidence to move forward today, knowing that we'll get through this COVID thing okay.
Well, one of the elements of teaching that will occur when the memorial built is the representation on the wall of stars that puts into perspective how many Michigan lives were lost during World War II. And that's really a stunning representation in the design, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah. So it's a black granite wall that has, as you mentioned, stars on there representing the Michigan lives that were lost during the war. So there's a total of 15,400 Michigan, 458 Michigan lives that were lost during World War II. And like we said, it wasn't just that, that ultimate sacrifice, but you also look at the sacrifices that everybody made, whether it was a Victory Garden rationing, I mentioned milkweed pods. There was so much that society did and sacrificed to support, the war effort.
Well, this has been very interesting. I wasn't aware of the work that was being done, so I'm glad here on Veterans Radio America we had the chance in association with the Association of Michigan Military Organizations, or AMMO, to highlight and spotlight the Michigan World War II Legacy Memorial. And John Mateen, President, can you give us one more time where people can go on the web to find out what you're doing and donate to the cause?
Sure. So our website is MichiganWW2Memorial.org. There's a button on there to donate now, and there's also a button to volunteer or get involved in other ways. And also, if anybody is aware of any other potential donors or foundations that we might be able to get funding from to help this be a reality, please contact us, and we always welcome getting more people involved in this. And I do want to give a shout out to AMMO Group in this, because as we look at this, people will say, aren't there other museums and things showing World War II? We have the Yankee Air Museum, the Holocaust Center, the Michigan Historical Museum, and then this will kind of round out with the Michigan contribution to World War II. And all of those things together, form a network of resources to help people learn about the different aspects and history.
Well, we want to thank you for being in the spotlight here and spending some time with Veterans Radio today.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Jim. Thanks for all the work that you did in the interviews for these three organizations that we talked about today. All members of the Association of Michigan Military Organizations. So on behalf of Jim Faucone, Tammy Bethune, and all the other people that are working on Veterans Radio this year and into the future, we want to say a very Merry Christmas and a very, very Happy New Year and Happy Holidays to all of you out there. And we thank you all for all of your support. And until next year, you are dismissed.